So we've met these gentlemen, so we don't have to do intros again. The first question has to do with the fact that cloud computing is increasing the amount as well as the types of traffic that are being transported between public and private data centers and also to end users, particularly with multimedia content. So, and we'll start with Sergey with this one. What can be done to alleviate the strain this is causing on networks? And when we get to Frank, let's interpret that in terms of should there be contingency plans that cover failures or congestion in networks as well as in just having storage somewhere off premises for that. And then Larry, good luck with answering it on behalf of Mike, but I'm sure he coached you. Sergey, what do you think?
Yes, that's a good question, and all pseudo protocols.
Make sure you talk in the mic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so this question is a good one, and all pseudo protocols, network protocols that were designed during the 80s and maybe early 90s, were basically not considering this amount of data that we have right now. And as we had the development of technology for storing and processing data, such as Hadoop, MapReduce, GPU computing, and so on, we can expect a great deal of efforts in R&D to be put into developing of network services, probably from large companies such as Cisco, Juniper, and so on, the leaders, but also maybe from the early startups. And yesterday's presentation on how we can enhance TCP to serve the high bandwidth, to serve better on high bandwidth links is a great example of that.
Okay, thanks. Larry?
I think the network strain is key, and it's a challenge. It's in handling some of these cloud computing deployments, it sort of takes two to tango. So you get the cloud piece, and you think you're really cool with all that, and it's like, oh my God, we got to get bandwidth, and we got to get it to the right degree. And it is a challenge. I think that it opens up opportunities. I think companies like Aspera that have found sort of a secret sauce for software is one. I saw, I think, in your latest newsletter, so here's a shameless plug for DCIA,
that
some of the companies with software-defined networking are working on ways to kind of be a more efficient deliverer of traffic on the existing network. And finally, it probably just creates a strategic burden and opportunity to be smart about how you plan a cloud deployment if you get that luxury from the outset to figure out where your data centers are going to be, what makes sense. Network is absolutely critical to the equation.
Yeah. Which leads into Frank's answer.
I agree. I think it's important to have the right enterprise architecture in place, contemplating anything that would compromise network traffic. Of course, at Iron Mountain, our job is to help customers figure out how to overcome the risk objections to doing business, and one of those is, obviously, outages that would impact the user experience. So I know that many companies don't think that our job starts until the traffic absolutely stops, but considering what could occur during the relationship, it's something that's going to impact whether or not the sale gets done. Because again, if I'm a large enterprise subscriber and I'm comparing a smaller provider to a larger provider, the choice may seem obvious that I might select the more established player. But if I'm digging in deep and I've done my due diligence, I might determine that there are contingencies in place. Maybe the smaller player has a better enterprise architecture. They're not reliant on any single point of failure that's going to shut down traffic, and that might be the choice. So obviously intelligent planning goes into it, and what you've heard from these two, the three of us today, is that there's a lot more to consider than just having that just network just considering the actual network traffic and the capacity controllers that you were talking about. By the way, I saw that YouTube that you had done, and I thought it was pretty nifty.
Thank you.
Thanks. Moving right along. Second question. Sergey focused on infrastructure as a service more than the other service deployment models in his talk. Are there different needs for traffic management for other major service models, such as you know, software as a service, platform as a service, other, the other more exotic ones that Larry talked about. In terms of, you know, is it just moving different amounts of traffic, or do the characteristics change, like the dynamics and the interactivity with these different service models? Let's start with Larry on this one.
I think that one of the things I was mentioning, again, from a provider perspective, looking at the opportunities in the market, is some degree of customization. And in that sense, that would create different needs on what the cloud infrastructure looks like and the delivery model. You know, we were, again, I keep going back to the one we're in the middle of right now with this real estate company. So they have certain needs that could dictate bandwidth and location and things like that. And so I think that customization and vertical industry focus would be a key driver for differentiating some of those needs.
Right. Frank, does it affect contingency planning if the traffic needs are different for the users?
Yeah, certainly. You know, in my experience, you know, large complex systems need to be tested, appropriately, and you know, it's not uncommon to determine that, you know, when you've created a platform with multiple feeds, multiple APIs, that something's going to go wrong, and there's going to be some latency along the way. So, you know, obviously, you know, the testing part is very, very important.
Okay. Sergey, last word. Have you seen any differences in your predictive analytics about the types of service?
Yeah, definitely. The key difference probably lies in the way how we measure it. If for infrastructure as a service is good enough measuring just the number of requests it goes to the application, then for software as a service, it comes in place some internal metrics such as queues to database or something. So basically, for software as a service, the load under or overutilization of your software and your cloud can be determined not by the number of requests you get to your backend, but some internal processes in the backend logic that is just a new level of complexity to add.
Interesting. Okay, we have a question, so let's take a timeout for that.
Yeah, sorry, I just got really excited that you guys talked about the network. I could come from more of a networking background and an organization that's very focused on fixing those network issues. So loved hearing you guys start to talk about that. One of the things that we're seeing is a shift from, if I've got everything on site, right, traditional organization, if I have a performance problem, people go, the network is slow, right? That's the first thing we go to. And so when we hear that, it becomes the network's team job to start troubleshooting that. Well, in a cloud environment, what the network team's telling us is, okay, people are calling me and saying Salesforce is slow. They might as well be calling me and saying Google is slow. How do I tell if that's our problem or their problem, right? And that's increasingly, I think, something that It's probably a maturity model thing. And as people get more used to cloud services, they're going to start asking, hey, can you start giving me some level of visibility into when you're having a problem? And I don't mean an availability problem. I mean, you're having a slowdown, an end user experience issue, versus when that's internal and it's on my end, because those users in my organization are still going back into my data center, out through some content filters, then out across the internet. I need to know, is it my problem or your problem? And it actually might not even be your problem. It might be the internet between us, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't control that, and you don't control that. So how do I figure out my problem? The internet is slow, something inside of EC2, for example, right? And I think that's something that we'll start to run into more as a common troubleshooting scenario as we adjust to this new deployment model. That was a crappy question, huh? There wasn't really
that's a very, you articulated the point real well.
I don't know if anyone has any more thoughts on it, though.
I mean, I think one thing that occurs to me, and it's like if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I have a telecom background, so everything looks like a telecom problem. But I've had the experience of having to kind of talk to a bunch of different prospective cloud providers, and the lack of sophisticated telecom savvy and knowledge and things where they don't realize I ran a telecom company for a few years, so they're telling me about this is how it works. I'm going, no, that's not how it works. I think there's a need and an opportunity on the cloud and the data side to get smarter about telecom. I would argue even to look for relationships with telecom providers. to figure out how to get bandwidth, to be smarter about it, to be more agile about it. Also, redundancy and monitoring, you can do that. There is a way to figure out to some degree what's wrong with your network and when it's working. There are dirty little secrets in the telecom industry about the kinds of networks you can order that are more or less reliable. So I think there's both a need and an opportunity for the cloud industry to get smarter about telecom.
I wish I had an answer for you. I'm one of those users that I'm on a first name basis with system support. They know me very well. I constantly complain. So.
Yeah, I agree that it's probably the issue of maturity and measuring the state and the performance of your application together with network and overall the cloud is a great deal. There are companies that dedicate their business to this specific point, such as Setlist, say. So it's the way how a company thinks about its business and its platform, its network, how will they serve their customers, if they rely on guests or if they rely on data. The second way is a little bit more expensive, but it produces greater results.
Thank you for articulating that. I mean, you gave me an idea. I mean, the network neutrality debate was, you know, a gasoline poured on a fire. But when Comcast and Netflix went at it a few months ago, and really it opened up a lot of more interest in that third level you mentioned, the kind of peering arrangements that happen outside the broadband network, but it's how the CDNs and the transporters actually deliver traffic intra broadband networks. So if we could at least say the problem is in the data center, problem is in the last mile network, or the problems in that peering thing, that would be a big start. And then that would help alleviate some of the, certainly some of the confusion that happens and some of the finger pointing as well. If we could agree as an industry to be honest and candid about at least doing something like that. But it's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up. Thank you. Anybody else have anything while we're... Okay, let me go to the next point, which was really keyed from Frank's discussion. You know, there's no doubt, and we talked about it, security and reliability, or the perception of those continues to, and maybe it's a more of an education communications issue than a real issue, but, you know, perception becomes reality. So some of the frequently cited reasons for delaying migration have to do with us, and certainly building redundancy into the architecture and having contingency plans is a key to it, but is there anything else that we haven't heard yet, starting with Frank, to ensure the safety of enterprise data and applications?
Well, I really like the direction that we're taking in terms of establishing standards to address those really bad days. So, you know, contingency planning, incident response, planning, you know, these are things that we don't spend enough time working on. You know, we don't do enough. We don't have as many fire drills, and I know that fire drills kind of stink. You know, you don't want to have to get up and walk out of the building just to help somebody conduct a test. But it's extremely important to get that part right, especially if you're talking about entrusting mission critical data to the cloud and how that might impact you. And if there's a threat of it putting you out of business, then naturally you wanna address that situation before it happens, and potentially before you enter into a relationship. So you know, in terms of addressing the security piece, that's a tough one, because, you know, it seems as if there's always something new. You know, we create a solution and then a new problem pops up.
Yeah.
Right around the corner. So, you know, being diligent about staying ahead of those potential problems is very, very important. Unfortunately, there's a lot of creative minds with negative intent that counters the world, keeps us on our toes. So, you know, you can't think of all the contingencies, but the ones that are within your control are the ones that you probably already know about today, and it's just a matter of satisfying the due diligence piece, creating the contingency plan, testing the plan, making sure that it works, and then, you know, just rest well at night knowing that good is good enough.
Larry?
I think to some degree it's about an honest, proactive conversation with the stakeholders at the outset. I understand that we in the cloud industry pitch it to customers that you're better off in the cloud than you are with on-prem because you have somebody taking care of your stuff whose sole mission is to be smart about data privacy and security. But I fear that we go too far in the pitch, and the implicit promise that it's a perfect world is just not one I would ever make, whether I was a business person or a lawyer. So I think the honest conversation is, this is a crazy world right now, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and there are things in evolution, but we have what we think are the most up-to-date, reasonably applicable security protocols. We honestly think that from a technical perspective, you're better off. We've looked at the guidelines if we're in a healthcare, financial services area, and we're smart about those and comply with those. And net, net, we think you're in the best possible position by putting your stuff in the cloud. That's the kind of conversation I would have without providing a money-back guarantee that it's a perfect world.
Good advice. Sergey, have anything to add?
Yeah, the only thing I can add is that, you know, that security battles between white hats and black hats are never-ending, because one technical protection has another way to overcome it. And I would look at security as some of like greater issue that implies the incentives of those who want to steal data. Basically, give them enough revenue for your data, who can be sold on the black market or whatever, and they will break any protection you can establish. Right. So I would say that that fighting incentives is at least as important as inventing new technological way to protect the data. That should be done together with maybe some government regulations and other ways to reduce the chance of earning with the data that you steal. And if there is no earning, nobody will go for your data.
Very good point. So during the conference, we've kind of focused on three verticals more than others in terms of their status of adopting cloud: the government, military, the media and entertainment, and the healthcare life sciences. So, curious about your observations on you know, what you see as working well in those sectors, and or where there are big holes that aren't working yet. Just your personal views on that. Let's start with government and military, and let's start with Sergey on it. Any observations you may have. What's working and what's not?
I don't know almost anything about U.S. government or military now, but I do know is about healthcare. There's a lot of holes using clouds for U.S. healthcare.
Okay.
What I can say about that is, you know, the federal government has done a wonderful job of creating these standards that have become FedRAMP, and you know, they've contemplated the contingencies that the provider would execute, but they didn't really spend a lot of time. And I read the 70-page NIST standards 800-53, and it only mentioned that there needs to be a contingency plan for financial failures, financial disasters that the provider suffers that impacts the subscriber, but they don't necessarily focus on the subscriber themselves. And if the federal government, the government agencies are the subscriber in this case, and something bad happens, well, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a bad day, and they've wasted a lot of taxpayer dollars, which is unfortunate. And that to me is the largest gap, because I'm a taxpayer too, and I would love to see them be able to have a contingency that they can execute independently of the provider, and that may include a redundant environment that is sitting somewhere warm that can be spun up independently as an escrow provider. We have a means to provide that service for our clients. In fact, we dropped some white papers on the desks here, so if you want to read more about it, you certainly can. But this is a gap that exists more, you know, probably less so in the federal government than other vertical sectors.
Larry?
I think the federal government, you know, definitely is a case of good intentions. I'm a little, I think the jury is still out. I think there's a pretty doggone small number of providers that have made their way fully through the FedRAMP program. Mm-hmm. and I kind of get the concept of the program, but I have some worries that some of the inherent tensions in that program are not conducive to getting a lot of good entrepreneurial companies through the pipeline to be accredited as providers, and I think that will be a bad thing for both the government as a customer and the cloud industry. So I think it's good intentions, but I think the jury is definitely still out on how effective it's going to be.
Thank you. Let's come back to Sergey. You started talking about healthcare life sciences. A little more color on that, and let's just go down and do the same thing again. What do you, from your perspective, what's working, what's not in the healthcare and life sciences space?
Yeah, healthcare, when they say security, they often means compliance. So I do think that is equal in healthcare. It's not the case with the real world. But that specifically touches the questions of storing the data in clouds, both especially public, but also sort of different halfway from private to cloud and so on. And at the moment, there is no perfect solution for healthcare providers who are under HIPAA compliance or any other policies to get their data into the cloud, to get the benefits of using cloud and not being violating the compliance regulations. This is probably the room to some companies to step in and offer some solutions. There are companies who are trying to do that, but it's still a way to go before we can say it is on the plateau of productivity.
Hmm. Okay. Frank? Well, I think that the healthcare and life sciences vertical segment has done a pretty yeoman's job of leveraging cloud services, but not. I mean, it's private cloud. It's single tenancy. You're looking more at an application service provider that has the core competencies of running the application, probably better and cheaper than the healthcare or life sciences company involved. So I think they've done a pretty good job there, and we see a lot of business from that vertical market as well. So I think they've done a pretty decent job of understanding where the computing environment needs to be and how it needs to be architected. In terms of gaps, they're kind of hamstrung by a lot of compliance requirements that prevent them from fully leveraging public cloud. But certainly if the business application is not mission critical, if it doesn't impact productivity or revenue or public safety, that's certainly an area where they would leverage public cloud more. We just don't see a whole lot of it.
Larry, what's your view?
I think on the business side, the sky's the limit for healthcare. I mean, just huge potential. On the compliance issues, it's daunting. Maybe this is sort of the opportunity for the lawyers to Sergey to jump in and say, we'll be the ones to help. I'm from Washington and I'm here to help you. But at least there, I think one thing that business wants more than anything else, they don't like regulation, but they don't like uncertainty. And the better the certainty is, so now we have a ruling that HIPAA has said that cloud companies where they have personal information are deemed business associates and take on those obligations. So, boo-hoo, that's bad, but okay, now you know that there's are terms of a business associate agreement that you can execute. You know that there are compliance requirements you have to comply with in order to meet that. Sometimes it's, stop boo-hooing and sort of roll up your sleeves and say, let's just sort of go. Companies are doing it, and it may impose an additional cost or burden and impose some constraints on their business, but I think there's at least been a little better certainty on the compliance. Some of the cloud providers don't like the results so much, but at least there's a path forward.
Thanks. So let's just go through it for media and entertainment, bearing in mind that as we sit here today, if you add Netflix traffic with YouTube traffic, you're talking about more than 70% of all the traffic on the internet at this point. So media and entertainment certainly taking off with high definition multimedia content. but how are they doing in terms of adopting the cloud, and where are there still big holes in what they're doing?
The traffic requirements are the key for all real-time data delivery, but also some deep technical issues with using big data on top of clouds. They are really deep, such as the consequent, not random, but sequential access to hard drive and so on that can be done, that cannot be done with cloud. That's why Hadoop works much better on premises deployments than clouds in terms of access to data and so on. So this is sort of some trade-off between the benefits of using clouds versus some things that you should forego for using these benefits. And each company takes some different path in this particular industry.
Thank you, Frank.
We have quite a few clients in this sector, and. As you know, the entertainment industry is cash rich, and they realize that, you know, if they are delivering services through the cloud or over the cloud, and you're watching, you know, a show or a movie, the quality of the user experience has to be good. It has to be good, otherwise you're not going to continue to deliver services that way. They're not going to be able to derive revenue that way. And we all know that entertainment companies love revenue, so they're going to really, really focus on that. So we do see a lot of activity in the entertainment industry, and they spare no expense when it comes to protecting the investment and making sure that they are able to deliver services without any kind of latency issues. So I can tell you that, you know, I watch Netflix. I do enjoy Netflix, but when the show stops and I have to wait for it, you know, that's the most frustrating thing in the world. And I'm, you know, it doesn't take me more than 5 minutes to turn off the device and just go back to watching normal television.
Sure. Larry?
Nothing more to add from what has been said.
All right. Anyone have a question for the panel? We're going to get a break. I have one final one. We haven't probed your insights into the three kind of use cases we've been focusing on the last couple of days. Mobile, cloud, devices everywhere connected. We talked a bit about big data, Sergey, but anything more on big data or this sort of internal project management, DevOps, mystical way of working? Do you have any comments on any of those three or each or any of those three?
When we speak about the Internet of Everything, as we call it, it implies that every device will be connected to some network, and we can measure pretty much everything in our life. Measuring is only halfway. Another halfway is what do we do with this measurement? That's basically the problem of control. In other words, stochastic control. How would we somehow interact with the world, given that we know something about this world, to ensure that we do some good things for people, for customers, for the world overall? And that's this is the problem that is pretty tough today, given the limited amount of data we have, and it will be even more important tomorrow when the amount of data will be much higher. So we should probably think not only about how do we gather the data with the Internet of Everything, but also what are we going to do with all this data? Mm-hmm. How do we leverage it to make business and to contribute to the world?
Good point. Frank?
Well, there's so much potential in the world today as it relates to cloud services. And cloud's not going away. I think it's clear that we're headed in the right direction. And to be honest with you, you know, the quality of my life is significantly better than it was in 1994, right? Before the web became popular. And I want more. I want for technology to be able to predict what I want when I want it, and certainly realizing that, you know, we haven't reached the tipping point. I think we all need to ask ourselves, you know, what is it going to take before, you know, the world is a better place and we've got better technologies and everybody's using the cloud and we're trusted in the cloud. And I think about the enterprise markets. And today, the enterprise markets they're knocking on the door, but they want to know that their data is secure. They want to know that the revenue streams are not going to stop if something happens to software, their software, mission critical software, and that there is no single point of failure, and making sure that we cover off on a lot of things in order to instill that trust is impossible, right? So you have to ask yourself, when is good enough? But in terms of what we can do, you know, there is some low-hanging fruit. And the low-hanging fruit, in my purview, and it's getting back to my presentation, is, you know, having contingencies that exist that your customers can execute independently of you. It's like having a living will, right? Mm-hmm. You have a living will because you love your family, and you want them to be able to find out where all the insurance policies are and where the keys to the safe exist and what should happen if you're unable to continue with life or with carrying on in the normal course, being able to speak and walk. And if I couldn't do that, I would certainly want my wife to have the information she needs to survive me. So I love my family, and SaaS providers love their customers. So why wouldn't they have a contingency plan in place that their customers can execute independently of them? And I think once the world realizes that they've got contingency plans in place, the trust is going to be there, and we're going to be able to exceed our expectations in terms of what we're capable of doing. So the Internet of Things will become a true reality once we can, you know, reach that tipping point.
Excellent point. Larry, you get the last word.
Just on the three areas you mentioned, and some, I think DevOps I think of in terms of opportunity for customization and verticalization, and I think the next evolution and opportunity for cloud providers will be to get smart about industries and be value add for those industries, and the ability to offer customized apps down to what I think McKinsey calls micro customized apps was really cool and exciting. Big data, I hate the name. I'd rather call it data analytics or smart information or something that doesn't sound so scary and onerous, because I think it's not just big companies or enterprise companies that could benefit. The telecom company that I ran was not a huge company. We had about 200 employees and whatever in terms of revenues and everything else. And if somebody had the struggle in running any business is just getting good, manageable information about what's going on and using it smartly and without being overwhelmed, whether it's kinks in your operational change, problems in customer service, sales and pipeline opportunities, which is one of the big things right now on big data. So huge value, getting smart about it, toning down the volume a little bit. I think there's a huge potential there. And mobile, I sort of see as a demand driver for cloud. So it's sort of table stakes. It's a gotta have. It's not an option anymore. Just every business is saying, we have people all over the place. They work on the go. They need access to a centralized database of documents and information that they can use.
Thank you very much.